Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Science Studio program. This is Keith Pannell, and today we're going to be talking about what is perhaps the most important issue in this region, at least I've always thought so, and that is water. Well, Russell knows about water when he adds it to his whiskey. I know about it when I have my one pint every day. But today we've got a special guest, Ed Archuleta, and I'm sure many of you know the name. Ed was the longtime director of the El Paso Water Utilities and has now come back and resurfaced in a new form, and that is as the director of water initiatives at the University of Texas at El Paso. So, Ed, you've been sort of like the phoenix, reborn in a different form. How does that feel? And welcome back.
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me, and it's good to be back on this program. It's been a few years since I was on here. But yes, I retired from El Paso Water Utilities in 2013, and at that time was offered a position right here at the University of Texas at El Paso to basically work with students and work and obtain grants and programs basically that would advance the science of water. So one of the things early that I did was we established a master's degree in water resource engineering management.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's a master's degree.
And that's been around for 5 years almost.
It's about 5 years, almost 5 years ago that we established that degree. So, because I always felt that what better place to study water than at the University of Texas at El Paso? And there's been a long relationship between UTEP and El Paso Water Utilities on research, particularly a gentleman by the name of Dr. Tony Tarquin.
Absolutely.
Civil engineering has done a lot of work over the years, and we... Shinsen, we've got Dr. Shane Walker, you know, another individual who came to UTEP probably about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Dr. Melinda Capel, those are individuals that I work with, along with Dr. Bill Hargrove from the Center for Environmental Resource Management. So
there's a team anyway now.
It's a team. It's different than what I did before, but when I was at the utility, I always believed that we needed to do more and more research, you know, and some of it direct research, some of it policy research, in order to advance the utility. So I certainly embraced it, and then coming to UTEP, I just followed through on some of the things I was doing while I was at the water utility.
Well, that's wonderful. And I mean, just when you reminded me that you've been on the program, it was about 15 years ago. and some of the questions that I remember we discussed are coming back to me now. But before we get into some specifics, let me tell you, first of all, when I first came here, over 40 years ago, there were clear signs and people were writing about the fact that El Paso County would run out of water in 25 years. I mean, I remember seeing a Dallas Morning News, I think it was, article on something along those lines. Clearly, we've come a long way from there. Why don't we start the program with you giving us a pretty sort of state of water for El Paso? Where are we today with our water supply and usage?
Okay. Well, you're right. I came here in 1989, and when I came here, that was pretty much the mantra, if you will, that El Paso was poised to get to run out of water because we were mining the Waco Bolson. As you know, we have two aquifers here, the Waco and the Mesilla. Well, the Waco is the one on the east side of the mountains, and it's shared with Juarez, and had historically been pumped pretty hard. And so back in the 1970s, when that prediction was made, it was based on the fact that if El Paso kept on increasing its per capita use of water and the population was growing, that indeed we were going to run out of water. So one of the things that I set about was to try to correct that. And the first thing we did was to develop a long-term plan. We really didn't have a long-term plan other than groundwater. So we established a plan where we decided that we were going to take water from the river when it was available. So we built the Jonathan Rogers Water Treatment Plant, 60 million gallons per day of capacity. We decided that we were going to reclaim and reuse wastewater for non-potable applications. So today there's about 50 miles of pipeline. The purple pipe that you see, that water is wastewater that's been treated to a standard that it can be applied to for industrial use, for turf irrigation, you know, apartments, commercial, cemeteries, et cetera.
Everything so, except drinking in reality.
So it offsets the amount of potable water that you need. And then we begin to investigate desalination. As you know, in 2007, we opened a huge desalination plant to tap some of the enormous amount of brackish water that exists in this region. And then we began to purchase lands east of El Paso for the future, so we have a future supply. So
let's just go back to the desalination. What's the capacity per day of that?
It's 27.5 million gallons per day. It's actually the largest inland desalination plant in the world. We didn't start off to break a record like that, but we had planned a 17.5 million gallon per day. When I approached Fort Bliss about it, they were thinking about a 10 million gallon per day plant. So I said, why don't we build a 27.5 million gallon per day plant, and we can sell you all the water that you need. And so after we did some investigative test borings and what have you on Fort Bliss, we decided to locate the plant on Fort Bliss.
So in fact, that means the city of El Paso Water Utilities, sells approximately 10 million gallons a day to the military?
It's not quite that much. They're not taking that much now because we also have fresh water that we furnish from groundwater, and they have their own wells, you know. But they have the capacity under the contracts we have to take as much water as they need. And, of course, as you know, once we spent a lot of time at the Pentagon in Washington and spent a lot of time in the Congress, you know, to convince people that El Paso was not run out of water, that we had diversified our portfolio and we could furnish the water. And that led to the huge, the BRAC, the base realignment closure, the $6 billion or so investment here in El Paso because of water.
That's sort of interesting because if you tell the Pentagon that the region where they've got this enormous facility is going to run out of water, I suspect that's a great lever that you have on the corridors of power to get more money to find a better solution.
As you know, many years ago, 10 years ago or more, we lost the third cab. We lost it to Fort Carson, Colorado, as you know. And so with that round of BRAC, you know, the intent was we're not going to lose any more troops. And a matter of fact, we're going to see what we can do to gain troops. And as a result, one of the big stumbling blocks was that they had heard at the Pentagon, they knew that El Paso was going to run out of water. So they were not going to be able to invest in El Paso. But once we started design that plant and went entered into an agreement, I think they realized that we could in fact furnish the water to Fort Bliss.
So we've got these sources. We've got the river when it's flowing. We've got the Waco balsam, and we've got the Mesilla balsam, and we've got the recycling or the desalination, and we've got the recycling. That's the third sort of approach that the El Paso Water. Tell us a little bit about that. How much of that now goes into our daily consumption?
Well, right now it's probably about 7 to 8 million gallons per day, something like that. Part of it is injected into the aquifer that the Fred Hervey Water Reclamation Plant. That plant treats water to drinking water standard when re-injected, but it's probably around 7 to 8 million gallons per day of wastewater that's reclaimed. As I mentioned, we furnish it to apartments, we furnish it to schools, we furnish it to cemeteries, and the Newman Power Plant receives reclaimed water, it's cooling water. So
it's growing. Right.
Yes.
I mean, the whole concept of the dead needing water.
Yeah.
just because we passed on doesn't stop our need for water.
Right.
Tell us a little bit then. I mean, what is the total consumption in the city? What do we need on a daily basis to run?
Well, if you average it across the whole year, it's about 110 million gallons per day of water that we require. In the summertime, it can go up to about 160 million gallons per day. The wintertime, like on a day like today, it might be around 60 to 65, 70 million gallons per day. So it's a lot of water, you know.
There are more summer days here than
The other component that we established, the first component that we established in 1990 was conservation, a huge conservation effort. So our per capita use of water has dropped. I think last year the utility reported 128 gallons per person per day, and it's down from over 200 when I came to El Paso.
But can you actually understand that as personal consumption, or is that just industry is being more efficient, farming is more efficient, as opposed to, I mean, it's nice for me to think that I'm part of the solution
because I cut back on water.
But
It is, since most of our customers are residential customers, you know, the people, you know, yes, industry, but we don't have that much large industry here that consumes a lot of water. that at least takes our water. You have the refinery, but they have their own wells and what have you. But no, that is personal consumption. Personal consumption has dropped, you know, significantly.
That's impressive.
About 35%.
Wow. And you see the opportunity for more reduction, or are we at the minimum in a sense?
Well, I think you can do more, but I think what's going to happen, the price has to increase more in order to get that extra water, you know.
Right.
But I think people have done a lot. Well, I don't know. There was a time years ago that we paid $1 per square foot to take out your turf. You may remember that. So a lot of the commercial establishments in particular and some residential took out their turf and planted, xeriscaping. They had to go with xeriscaping in order to get the rebate. So we've had a number of rebates. We've had rebates on toilets, you know, taking out the toilets. We've had rebates on conversion from...
Wait, hang on. I didn't know this. There's a rebate for reducing the number of toilets in your house.
No, to convert. The old toilets used to use about 3.5 gallons per flush.
Okay.
And now the new ones use 1.6 gallons per flush.
Okay.
But back in the day, back in the 1990s, for example, when those toilets first came out, we were giving people $100, you know, per toilet to take them out. So I've lost count, but I think there's probably been 70 or 80,000 toilets that were replaced in this city over the past 20 years or so.
I missed that deal.
No.
I wasn't
paying
attention.
But if you look at the toilets, there's a gallons per minute on each flush.
On each flush.
Right, I know, but I mean, I don't tend to look at that. But anyway,
it's standardized now by EPA,
okay,
1.6 gallons per flush, right.
Mm-hmm. And you've still got to have a certain pressure on the flush, because I know the toilet paper won't break up if the pressure's not enough,
etc. The early ones were a little bit sluggish, but the new ones, they changed the vortex, so to speak, to where the velocity, you know, through there is able to get that flush down.
So it's good engineering. Well,
it
Russell,
is.
You've been sitting there listening to this. What strikes you as worthwhile further discussion?
Well, I would like to know that I've been involved in many projects which are associated with desalinization. And so what is the desalinization technology that we're on board with right now, since there are many?
It's a reverse osmosis. It's reverse osmosis, and of course we have to have a certain pressure in order to get that reverse, you know, that osmosis to be in reverse. So we did pilot plant studies before we built the plant, of course, and I think the pressure is maybe 110 or so pounds per square inch, but it obviously takes horsepower in order to reverse that pressure. But these are membranes. This is the treatment of choice. You know, it's the most economical out there, the most efficient currently that exists, you know, to be able to do that for what we have. The groundwater we have here, it's not real brackish. It's about 3,000 parts per million or milligrams per liter of total dissolved solids, compared, say, to ocean water, which might be 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 or more. So ocean water takes a lot more pressure, takes a lot more energy, but groundwater is very much more economical.
We'll come back to that point in a minute. We have to take a break. You're listening to Science Studio, Keith Pannell, Russ Chianelli, Ed Archuleta, who is now the Director of Water Initiatives at the University of Texas, right here in El Paso, the center of much, much important research on water. We'll be back in one moment. Welcome back to Science Studio, Keith Pannell, Russ Chianelli, Ed Archuleta, who is the Director of Water Initiatives at the University, right here in El Paso, Texas. And Ed, you mentioned earlier before the break that one of the sources of water that you could see for the city and the county was you purchased land elsewhere in order to be able to utilize the water underlying that property.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about why is that the methodology, and how it is that you can just go and buy land and take the water?
Well,
and export it effectively.
Yeah. When I was at the water utility, we purchased land at Valentine and we purchased land at Van Horn, and at that time attempted to purchase land in Del City. But in Del City, the regulations were not in place and there was litigation at that time, so we really couldn't follow through. But since I retired, the water utility has purchased vast amounts of acreage at Del City for importation.
I didn't know that, because you fly over Del City, that's a rural farming community.
It is, right.
Don't they object?
No, because here's what's happening. Basically, in each of those three areas that I mentioned, they have what they call underground water conservation districts. And so you can only take so much water, you know, out of it, you know, and make it, in other words, to keep it sustainable, okay? So in the case of Del City, for example, you have to have a permit, and the people that have historically farmed there were granted certain types of rights to their water, okay? So they can either apply the water to their land, or if they wanted to, they could sell it to the city of El Paso. And they've elected to sell it to the city of El Paso because it's worth a lot more to sell it than it is to farm, okay?
So the return on farming is just rather negligible. It's a way of life, yes, but not economically viable?
Right. No, I mean, it's just a supply and demand kind of issue in terms of the water pricing, right? So the utility has spent, I forget, a couple hundred million dollars in acquiring all that land out there. So the farmers, obviously, you know, they look at themselves. A lot of these farmers, you know, their kids aren't even interested in farming.
Right.
So they go ahead and sell their land or their water rights, you know, to the utility. Now, the utility plans to import water from that area. The earliest will be 2050. That's the current planning threshold. By the year 2050, would import a certain amount of water. Now, it's not going to be, it's going to be more like maybe initially more like 20,000 acre feet or about 20, let's say 20 million gallons per day. I mentioned to you that El Paso uses about 110 per year. So it'd be a fraction, maybe 15 to 20% of the current use at that, you know. But by then, the use of water may be up to 120, 130 million gallons per day. So it's a small but important part.
So this particular source of water would be used for the gray water?
Or no, this would be potable water. This would be potable water. The water at Del City, the water there's two aquifers out there. There's the Bone Springs Aquifer and the Capitan Reef. The Capitan Reef is pretty close to fresh water, and the utility owns land there. So some of that water could be imported without desalination. The rest of the water would have to be desalted.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's a viable source. And you mentioned the key feature, which I didn't realize, that there's a limit on how much water you can remove.
Yes, sir.
In order to maintain this wonderful word, sustainability.
Yes, right.
So the water table will not be significantly dropping during this process?
No, that's the intent. That particular aquifer is recharged from the snowfall at Ruidoso, you know, in the mountains of Ruidoso. That recharges that whole aquifer there.
Ah.
That's where that water comes from, okay?
How is that recharge going now?
It's how's it going?
Now, yeah.
It's going well.
We have global warming. And
well, yeah. But so far, the aquifer responds, you know, in other words, you know, when they pump and they irrigate out there, and then, you know, there's wells out there, monitoring wells that they have to make sure the aquifer is not dropping. If the aquifer drops below, then the farmers are only allowed a lesser amount of water to take, okay?
And that applies all over the region of Texas? Is that?
Well, it's where they have these groundwater conservation districts, and there's about 120 of them throughout the state of Texas. There's a lot of them, right?
So the issue that I know about, because I travel on I-10 quite a little and often have to stop in Fort Stockton, either to pick up some wine or to pick up some water or for a coffee or something. And there's been a lot of controversy, I think, about people from out of the region buying the land specifically just to get the water rights in order to sell it to big cities in the area.
Right.
Is that the best way to run water policy?
Well, you know, when you look at a growing city like El Paso, you know, like I said, El Paso's doing about everything they can, you know, to be able to manage the water. You've got all this growth on the east side of El Paso, so that's where that water has to be supplemented, right? In other words, the with global warming, with less water coming down the river and taking more water from the
aquifers. I understand it from the point of view of the city.
Right.
On behalf of the population of a million or so. But when you get private investors buying, who happen to be very rich, buying the land in order to make a lot of money out of the water and not being local owners, I worry about that.
Yeah. It's a concern. I always felt that the utility needs to own the water, not the private sector.
Right.
Because if the private sector owns the water, then you're going to end up with a lot of price gouging, you know.
Yeah.
So as long as the utility owns the land, owns the water, and can manage it in a way, as I meant, sustainability, then I think you'd be all right.
I'm going to bring Russell into this conversation because I know he's going to have some particular questions or viewpoints about that.
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about before is a lot of those companies that buy water also dig wells. There's a huge interest in these areas for finding petroleum. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I just wanted to make that comment. So the other question I have, too, is that when you talk about the Rio Grande, you talk about phosphorus and nitrogen from fertilizing going in. And I know about that because we have a company that uses algae for fertilizer. And in that case, no nitrogen or phosphorus enters the water system. Can you talk a little bit about farming and this fertilizer going into the water?
Well, you know, the amount of return flows that come from farming, you know, they add to the water supply that's in the Rio Grande, right? But when you get to the water treatment plant, the water treatment plant can take out, you know, those type of constituents, you know, so it's not an issue in terms of water quality, you know. The water quality is treated.
That brings up an interesting point. When you clean up the water, right, where does it all go? The material that you remove, do you put it down a deep hole or can you sell it? I mean, what happens to all that?
Oh, the sludges?
Yeah, the sludges.
Yeah, the sludges are basically taken out and then they're landfilled.
Okay, they can't be used as fertilizers directly or something like that?
I guess they could be, but it's not a significant amount and it's not economical to be able to do something like that, right? Cities are having to spend so much money on new standards for this and for that, for arsenic, you know, for this chemical, for that chemical, for that chemical. And when you think about it, 50% of our water is on lawn irrigation. Another 12 to 13% is to cool ourselves, right? Less than 1% is what we drink, right? So I really think in the future there's going to be a point of use system of some kind, a point of entry at the water meter that the utility will maintain, you know, for each home and each business, you know, in order to treat the water. At that point, that would be utilized, you know, for drinking water or for whatever use it might be, because people are using so much bottled water today and so much of our water is treated such a high standard, and yet it's not used in a very beneficial way.
I remember 15 years ago we had this similar conversation because at that time I'd just come back from spending 5 months down in Mexico with my family and on a sabbatical, and all of the drinking water was delivered to us in these big garrafons, I think they're called,
right.
You know, 10 gallons, 5 gallons, and all the other water from the faucets, the taps, mm-hmm. was just gray water. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a sensible way to operate. Right. And I remember asking you, I said, Archuleta, why don't we do that in El Paso? Mm-hmm. And your response then was, well, we've thought about it, as have, say, Tucson and Albuquerque, but none of us want to be the first city in America to say, well, don't drink the water.
Yeah.
We'll supply it for free, but are we any closer to that panacea?
I think we are because, you know, as I mentioned, particularly salinity is one of our biggest issues here, right? Salinity. And so, you know, at what point, how much do you invest in trying to reduce salts? And why not, you know, like I said, people have already gotten to where they're drinking, you know, bottled water. Why not just say, okay, this water is going to be used for irrigation for that, you know, and then this part of the water is going to be used for you know, for cooking and for drinking and what have you.
And you could give it away.
And give it away.
Right.
Yeah. Well, not, I don't know about give it away, but...
Well, I mean, it could be...
could be priced,
I mean,
differently, right?
Much cheaper than buying a bottle of water these days. It can be up to $3 a bottle. Some places it's 50 cents. It's a market economy.
Well, it's a, you know, for example, I don't know if you know, the utility now is planning to go the next step on reclaimed water, which is treat reclaimed water to a drinking water standard and put it back in the pipe.
Good.
I guess you're aware of that.
I'm not,
purification,
but I mean,
direct water purification, right. They're designing that plant now. It's going to be a 10 million gallon per day plant, but it's very expensive, very expensive. I don't know what the final price tag might be, but it's probably going to be well over $100 million.
Seems to me, and it did before and it does now, that a discussion of the facilities within this city, you really can't make a sensible discussion without bringing the fact that we live next to Ciudad Juarez with twice as many people, maybe three times. What's the relationship now between the water utilities here, as far as you know it, and the similar system in Mexico?
Well, I can tell you, when I was at the water utility, I outreached to the water utility, the Juntas de the Aguas y Municipalidad, the JMAS, Juntas de Aguas y the Saneamiento, you know, which is water and wastewater utility in Ciudad Juarez. And we used to meet with them periodically. I'd go over to Ciudad Juarez, they'd come over, and we'd share information. Basically, we were just trying to make sure we understood each other's plans and, you know, help them technically. And so that relationship still exists between the two utilities. Now, the violence in Juarez, you know, has kind of tempered some of that, you know, discussion as often. But
right.
They come over here more so than people going over to Ciudad Juarez at this point in time.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, what is their state of technology over
there?
Oh,
I see.
Do they have water recycling? Do they have plans for a desalination plant, for example?
They don't have plans for desalination at this point, but they, I don't know if you know, years ago when I came here, they didn't have any wastewater treatment at all. They're called the Aguas Negras, the black ditch.
Right.
But now they have what they call secondary treatment of water, wastewater. Their water supply comes from still the Hueco Bolson, but Carlos Slim, you know, invested in a project on the west side in Conejos Medanos, west of Juarez, and they bring water in, you know, from that area. So they're still on groundwater. They're not on surface
right.
water.
Carlos
point.
Slim is the fellow that owns Mextel, or the mobile phone.
One of the richest
makes
men
a
in the
fortune.
World.
Right. I remember trying to call from Guanajuato to call home to my family.
Right. Oh,
so expensive.
Right. Okay.
One last comment about anything to do with the future in water, Ed, or about the initiatives that are at the university.
Well, I think the future for El Paso is good, in my opinion. I think as long as we keep on doing what we plan to do, conserve water, take water from the river when it's available, you know, manage the aquifers responsibly, use reclaimed water, desalinate water, and then import water to a certain degree at a point in time, I think El Paso is going to be doing just fine, despite the drought, despite the climate change.
Thank you very much, Ed Archuleta. 15 years, and you're still on top of this game and enjoying it, too.
I am. Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Okay. And Russ, thank you. And Sam Cassiano, thank you for, I got the name right this time. Thank you for putting it together. We look forward to the next Science Studio program and whoever it may be. Take care.